Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 4th of May 2015, the podcast that dukes in the urinal. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again this week is Chris Hangartner. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back, Shane.
Okay, so let's sub-rip the news of the bogus.
Oh, what do we got today?
Well, the big news this week has been the violence in Baltimore,
of
the rioting in the wake of the death of Freddie Gray at the hands of the Baltimore police.
Oh, yeah. What do you expect from the police nowadays?
Well, I really didn't want to cover this, since I don't know what there is to say that we didn't already say about Ferguson. I mean, everything there seems to apply here as well.
Oh, yeah. You can only tell cops to stop killing people and people to stop rioting as a form of protest for so long.
Well, and it's the same thing. You either have to take the side of the cops, which means that the cops did everything right and absolutely did nothing wrong, and the protesters and the rioters are the same people and they're all horrible. Or you got to take the other side and say, no, the cops are wrong, therefore all this rioting is justified when it just isn't.
Yeah, I remember hearing something that the mayor actually supported the rioters. She said, we're going to give like a little space, you know, for the rioters to just trash the place.
I think you're kind of missing the point there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's pretty much the same old, except that Dave Turcotte sent me this one story, and I just had to cover it. All right, so we all know about the Bloods and the Crips, right?
Yep.
These major drug gangs at each other's throats. So many movies and TV shows and things about that. Well, apparently, they and another gang called the BGF, I don't even know what that stands for.
Me neither.
And all sorts of other gangs have called a truce to help protect Baltimore from the rioters and from all the other stuff that's going on there.
Wow, that's cool. Faith in humanity restored.
Yeah. Yeah, except for the police and the rioters.
Oh, yeah. They're probably still at it.
What does it say when criminal drug dealers behave better than they do?
I don't know. But I've had military friends that are criticizing police actions lately.
Well, and then, of course, you had the media jumping right in and says this means that they're going to gang up to kill cops and burn down the city and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, they're always useful for that.
Yeah, and the Baltimore City Police Department was all ready to trample over everyone's rights over this credible threat of all these attacks that were going to come forward. Never any evidence that they were going to commit any attacks or anything like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not against having a police force that deals with rioting, but we tend to deploy them way too quickly.
Well, if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yep.
So what do you think is going to happen when all these police departments get all this paramilitary equipment and all this riot gear and everything?
Oh, yeah, they're going to use it. Seriously, I've seen some police departments, you know, with armored personnel characters that are military grade, you know, not like those armored trucks, but
oh, yeah.
But like actual, you know, the track vehicles.
Yeah, they get them from the Pentagon.
Oh, yeah.
There's a program for doing that. Well, we should give kudos to Deborah Wiener of WBAL-TV. She was pretty much the only one who actually tried to figure out what was really going on with this truce. She spoke to a whole bunch of them. They said they're wanting to protect their communities from the violence and the looting and anyone who should put it in danger. And apparently they were the ones who were going through defending a lot of properties, standing in the way when looters would try to go into a business and trash the place.
Well, yeah, that's good for them.
And that's a good thing. As I don't know. I think this was before then, so I doubt this was a gang member, but there was a picture out of just one guy standing in front of a store. And he was basically saying, you're not going to loot this store. And that's all it is. And they bypassed that store just because he was standing there.
Oh, kind of reminds me of what the Koreans did during the L.A. riots in Koreatown. They actually placed up barriers and actually had like little patrols there. They actually, for a while, policed themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, and people say, well, without a state, who's going to police the neighborhood?
Well, that's the whole thing. Statism is based on dehumanizing you and getting you to believe that you're helpless and that one person can't make a difference. Well, think about that guy standing in front of the store with all that rioting and looting going on. Think about that guy at Tiananmen Square and that famous picture standing in front of that big line of tanks.
Oh, yeah. And there was also, during the Rwanda genocide, there was that one Senegal captain who was helping protect a bunch of children, despite the fact that the UN was telling him, no, you can't interfere. You got to stay on the sidelines and not get involved.
Yeah.
It's funny because statists, you know, tell us that well, if it wasn't for, you know, government intervention, Rwanda could have been saved had the government intervened, yet it was United Nations incompetence that led to it in the first place.
Well, and it's also like we were talking about a few months ago in Acapulco when the police, you know, got all corrupt and no one could rely on them. And I think they even ended up going on strike. And
oh, yeah.
They basically ended up having no police. And so it was the drug gangs, the drug cartels, who said, okay, we're in charge now. And they started keeping the peace. I mean, they kept the peace a lot, but with a lot more extreme measures than a libertarian would like. But,
yep.
You know, that's what happens when you have this central state authority and it breaks down.
Oh, yeah.
That's not the inevitable result of the absence of government. That's the inevitable result of the failure of government.
Oh, yep.
So there's also a video on this link from the Baltimore Sun. And they were meeting in churches and delivering speeches on the streets all about peace and justice. And one of them told the reporter that the police don't want them to call a truce because they want them out there killing each other. Because the more gangs are out there killing each other, you know, the more the police will say, aha, see?
Oh, yeah.
We need to do more. We need to have bigger budgets and more gear and things like that.
Yeah, same reason why, in my honest opinion, I think that's why the ATF and the DEA are secretly letting some of these, I'm not trying to sound like a conspiracy nut, but I do think, you know, one of the reasons why the ATF and the DEA have those programs where they deliberately sell weapons, to areas that have a lot of, you know, crime is because they want to keep their jobs. You know, there needs to be a criminal element or else they don't have a budget.
Well, and I don't think it's conspiracy. I just think it's incentives. I mean, if you look at what happens and then ask who benefits.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, who benefits? The police, the DEA, the politicians, and then who's behind it? Yeah.
And I mean, here's the thing. The ATF wasn't even started as an anti-gun organization. It was started out as an anti-alcohol organization. But then when Prohibition ended, they were almost shut down. But then apparently some lobbyists said, oh, no, you still need us. There's still guns and explosives in there. You still need us.
And how tobacco gun in there, I'll never understand.
Yeah, since tobacco's been, like, legal since, like, what, forever?
Yeah.
Although they are starting to declare war on unlicensed tobacco.
No, that doesn't surprise me.
Oh, yeah.
Say, if you're tired of the promos in this podcast, well, the patrons got it early and with no ads or promos. Just go to patreon.bogosity.tv and donate at any level. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide the means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv. Well, it seems like every time we turn around, some company is pestering us with another crazy copyright claim. Enter tractor manufacturer John Deere. They want to say that when you buy a tractor from them, you don't own it.
Oh, I got nothing. That is... I don't... See, I'm speechless now. That's dumb.
Yeah?
That's like saying that the house you own belongs to the development company that made it even after you've paid all your mortgage and all that. It's like, what?
Yep.
You know, your house could be like 100 years old and like the company that made it's probably out of business, but nope, you still don't own it.
Nope, you have, quote, an implied license for the life of the vehicle to operate the vehicle.
Oh, yeah, that's stupid. Now, I could see that, like, if they were renting it, but they're not renting it. They're buying it and keeping it.
Right.
I'm sorry, John Deere. You know, I mean, I see your vehicles all the time living in Wisconsin, which has a lot of dairy farms, but, you know, that's stupid of you, man.
I've always favored Simplicity myself.
Simplicity, is that a company or?
That's another tractor company. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah, and they're not the only one. Several manufacturers submitted comments to the Copyright Office. And of course, it's about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Yeah.
And they're actually going to hold a hearing in July to try and determine which of the products we buy we get to modify or repair. Because, I mean, one thing farmers do is repair their own stuff. They can't really afford to go and take it somewhere.
Oh, yeah. You know? And you know what? It's pretty funny because this kind of reminds me of what some communists want, you know, where no one owns anything. You know, imagine that, you know, is a society we want to live in, you know? It's like what Lord Teed Hawkeye says, you know, it's a question of philosophy. Imagine if a private company did that. You know, imagine if communism, you know, acted like a private company. Imagine, you know, like what you just said, you know, a company said, okay, you don't own any product you buy from us. You're just renting it. And if you do something with it without our permission, we're going to arrest you. You wouldn't be seeing that as sharing and caring. You'd be seeing that as tyranny.
Exactly.
It's only wrong unless our side's doing it.
So the idea here is nowadays there's so much high-tech stuff going on in tractors and in our cars and things like that that has a lot of computer software. Our computers, our smartphones, our coffee makers, our refrigerators, all these things, even tractors, have computer software running in them.
Oh, yeah.
And they're claiming copyrights on this computer software, which means that if you need to get into that software to repair the vehicle, according to them, you're not allowed to do that because of copyrights.
Well, no comment. That's just, I don't even know what kind of sense it makes. Like, who in their right mind thought that would make sense, you know?
Well, and you know what they're doing. They're just buying older equipment now that doesn't have that.
Oh, yeah. And that's going to make us, you know, much less safe because, you know, it's older equipment. You know, that's what happens when you try to regulate the market, people. That's what happens.
And it's going to hurt the business of John Deere and all these other companies because no one's buying the new stuff anymore. They don't get money when you buy a used tractor.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're buying it from the former owner, not from John Deere.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, I'm all for capitalism and all that. You know, if a company wants to do something, that's fine. But they need to understand that if you're going to do something like this, you're going to face the consequences. If you say, oh, well, to protect our patents and our copyrights, we're going to limit the availability of our services or goods. Well, expect to have fewer customers then.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder if they're going to try to pull what the video game companies did a number of years back by saying, oh, you can't buy video games used. That's not allowed. That's a violation of copyright. They actually tried saying that. I don't think they succeeded, but...
Oh, yeah. And speaking of video games, you know, Steam actually had some controversy around over for its pay to mods. But here's the thing which I give them kudos for. When people said, oh, this is stupid. Your policy for premium mods is stupid. They said, okay, you're right. We're sorry. We won't do that anymore. That's one reason why I like Valve, is that when they do something stupid, they admit what they did was stupid and they fix it.
Well, I mean, that's good enough for me. I don't expect perfection out of anyone, but when you screw up, say, whoops, sorry, we screwed up, let's fix it.
Well, yeah, you know, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying, you know, companies are flawless. You know, almost every company, you know, has a skeleton in their closet. What I want to see is a company, you know, take personal and financial responsibility for it when it happens.
But when you don't have to live with the fallout of it, we can just run whining to the government and say, protect us with bogus copyright laws and stuff like that. They no longer have the incentive to respond to their customers.
Oh, yeah.
So actually, the people who get into the software to repair their own tractors, they're actually calling them pirates. Now, this is why slippery slope is no fallacy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, every time you come up with something like that, well, that's the slippery slope fallacy. It is no fallacy.
Yeah.
They said that pirates were people who take copyrighted material and spread it around and just give it around so that all people can get it without paying for it.
Oh, yeah, the magical P word. Oh, you interfere with some sort of software without our permission, ye'd be a pirate.
Well, I mean, that's just it. These people aren't distributing copies of the software or anything like that. They're just repairing their own tractors.
Yeah, last time I checked, pirates were people who went into ships and plundered them, not walked up and said, hey, your ship looks damaged. You want help in repairing it? And then the ship company says, no, that's our ship. You have no right to fix it.
Or even more traditionally, you know, the pirate comes over, swings over to your ship. Boy, I really like the way you put your mast up. Let me make a little diagram of that so I can do my mast the same way. And that's a pirate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's our ship design. You have no right to copy our ships.
Yeah, so John Deere Company said, quote, it would make it possible for pirates, third-party developers, and less innovative competitors to free ride off the creativity, unique expression, and ingenuity of vehicle software. Yeah, like I'm sure they've got some real Rembrandts and Van Goghs in there.
Yeah.
They even said that it might lead to them pirating music through the entertainment system.
Last time I checked, I don't think vehicle computers can really work like that.
Yeah.
All they can do is send a signal to the engine saying, okay, someone inserted the key and turned it, turn on. Or is that how they work? I'm not a, like I said, I'm not a computer guy, so.
Well, I don't know how it works in tractors, but.
Tractor and vehicle computers are different than ones we type on and go on Google with.
Right, or you have in your smartphone, things like that. They're all different, but they're all computer technology. They all work different ways. This also includes nearly every major auto manufacturer, making the same case to the Copyright Office, saying that if people get into their software for purposes of repairing their own car, it's piracy. And about the only one who hasn't joined in on this, about the only major automaker who hasn't joined in on this, it should be said, is Tesla Motors. Gotta love Tesla.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with them, but still, you know, I mean, I understand Toyota and Honda are probably in on this too, but, you know, this does show why the American auto industry is struggling and all these European and Japanese companies are succeeding is because while they still, you know, have some dumb, you know, regulations protecting them, they have fewer of them protecting them than American auto industry, so.
So General Motors told the Copyright Office that people, quote, conflate ownership of a vehicle with ownership of the underlying computer software in a vehicle. So at least they're not going as far as John Deere and saying you don't really own the car. You own the car, you just don't own the software that runs on the car.
Oh, yeah. That's like saying, oh, you own the house, but you don't own the lawn or the furniture that's in the house.
Or you don't own the bricks in the foundation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, they were pointing out just ridiculous things. Unsanctioned modifications could make vehicles go faster or violate emissions regulations.
Yeah, because people didn't do that back when cars didn't have computers.
Yeah, and it's not like those things aren't already illegal without having to go to copyright.
Oh, yeah.
GM even went so far as to say that locking people out of the software helps innovation.
Another reason to hate GM.
Yeah, I do drive a Chevy. Not really happy about it at the moment.
I have a Subaru.
You know what the funny thing is? I drive a 99 Prism, and everyone who has ever looked under the hood and actually looked at how it works is going, this is a Toyota Corolla.
Oh, really?
That's apparently what they did. They took all the plans for a Toyota Corolla and made it theirs.
Toyota should get on the phone and sue someone. if they had a case, they could do that, you know.
Yeah, well. So getting back to the story, California farmer Brian Talley said, quote, the bad part is, my sense is, these companies are just locking up this technology and increasing the sort of monopoly pricing structure that just doesn't work for us. We are used to operating independently, and that's one of the great things about being a farmer. And in this particular space, they are really taking that away from us.
Oh, yeah. The U.S. government's never really been friendly to the family farmer because people like to say, but look at what the government's doing, you know, to help the agriculture industry. Yeah, but here's the thing. If your net worth isn't at the very least $30 million a month, they're not going to help you.
Oh, the smaller farmers lose out and lose out big.
Oh, yeah, you know.
The only people that are helped are the big corporate farms and the guys who just decide they're going to run a fraud and just have a bunch of land they're not doing anything with and claim farm subsidies. I can take you to lots of fields within walking distance of my house that are supposedly farmed that people are getting farm subsidies for, and there's just trees growing there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know Bruce Springsteen? He gets farm subsidies, yet he doesn't farm. It's because he owns, like, this little countryside house, and apparently he got a farm subsidy because an organic farmer works there, and his neighbors, on the other hand, and have to pay, like, I think it's $1,000 per acre. Meanwhile, he only has to pay $100 because of the subsidy.
Another reason to hate Bruce Springsteen.
What happened to you, Bruce? What happened to you? You used to write some good music. Now what are you doing? Yeah, he sings songs about how the government's bringing down the little man, yet he's using a subsidy that's crushing the little man.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is the thing. People talk about America being capitalist. The essence of capitalism is if you buy it, you own it.
Yep.
That's it, and that's what is being taken away from us here.
Oh, yeah.
If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP? A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government censors. It's essential in this day and age, so go to vpn.pagosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world, and they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.pagosity.tv. All right, so more copyright idiocy, and this story is actually pretty similar to the one we just covered, so if you skipped the last one, you might want to go back and play through it, but this time, it's from the world of 3D printers, and a lot of us saw the copyright problems with 3D printing coming. We always thought, though, it would be about the 3D designs themselves, because you can download a lot of these from the Pirate Bay.
Oh, yeah. I remember with 3D printing, I remember where so many gun control nuts were going, oh, no, now people can make homemade Sten guns and kill people. Oh, no.
Well, I mean, you could print out your own car parts.
Well, yeah,
and just do it without having to pay, because, you know, car companies will make these custom parts just so they can jack up the price when people need a replacement part. But hey, if you can just 3D print it.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah.
That's what we've been waiting for. That's probably going to happen. But what's already happening is something even more ridiculous.
Oh, what is it?
Well, this Tech Dirt article goes back to something that happened, I think, like back in the 90s or something with laser printers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same thing I just said about the car parts. The printer manufacturers decided that, like, if you bought an HP printer, you should buy your toner from HP. And, of course, jacking up the price because it's a monopoly. But, I mean, it's not just HP. That was just an example. But, you know, the idea is they would put a special chip in their toner cartridges, and the printer would look for the chip to make sure you put in the right cartridge. And, of course, what immediately happened was other printer manufacturers figured out a way around that, of course, and started making compatible toner cartridges. They took them to court about it, and this time they lost because the courts realized how dumb it was. It's like, look, they can buy replacement toner from anywhere. That's what the court said, so they lost that one. But the 3D printer manufacturers are trying to do the same thing.
Aw, man, I was hoping they'd be the new revolution, but nope.
Nope.
They're falling for GM disease. Yeah, that's what we should call it, GM disease or GM syndrome.
Yeah, so the idea is when you do the 3D printing, you have to load up whatever material it is you're printing with. Usually it's some kind of plastic, but you can also do metal and I think silicone and some other things.
Yeah, I remember reading somewhere they're actually working on a 3D printer that can actually do it, only it can use like organic materials like bacon equipment and even, you know, human body parts.
Oh yeah, they've gotten to where they can 3D print a heart, just the collagen part, which is like this structure, and then what they do is they put the stem cells on it, and somehow the stem cells look at this structure and they go, oh, hey, I'm on a heart, then I need to make heart cells, and they can actually grow the heart around that.
Oh, kind of like those nanobots that turned all those people into gas mask zombies in Doctor Who. That's a good episode, by the way.
Except this is the patient's... Oh, I love that episode. Except this yeah. is the patient's actual stem cells.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really cool for that. And also, dentists are 3D printing teeth, you know, with proper enamel. And if you lose your tooth, they can print you a new one.
Oh, cool.
All sorts of amazing things happening. But this is a true revolution here, 3D printing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I heard, I don't know if it was a 3D printer or whatnot, but they used a similar technology to make a hamburger that didn't involve killing any animals.
Yeah, they're working on cloned meat. And the problem with that is, just by cloning the meat, you only get the muscle tissue, and so it doesn't taste very well.
Oh, yeah, I know. I saw a video on that where they tried it for the first time, where they give it to these professional food critics, and they're like, this will revolutionize the food industry. This will offer a nutritious burger, and we don't have to kill any cows. And all the food critics have this look of, what the heck is this thing? This thing, they've all got looks of disgust on their face while they're eating it. It says this thing tastes like cardboard.
Well, the problem is it's just the muscle. It's not the fat. They have to work about putting the fat in. And they say it'll actually be pretty easy to do a replacement for ground beef that way. But if you want a steak, you'll basically need a 3D printer to print out the muscle and fat tissue into the form of the steak.
Who knows? That thing in Jurassic Park where they learned to clone dinosaurs, that may be a reality.
Maybe. I think they were going to try to do that with either a mammoth or a mastodon. They have the gene sequence fully sequenced.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
I think
yeah.
They're going to try to do that.
Yeah, I heard about that. Like, they found, like, the body of a frozen mastodon from, like, several thousand years ago. And while it's largely dead and mostly fossilized, there is still a little bit of genetic sequence left. And they're going to try to plug it into a computer and see if, like, the cells will conform to the DNA structure.
Yeah, I think it was frozen in ice.
Word of advice, if you're going to clone a velociraptor, don't put frog DNA in it or else they're going to become hermaphrodites and they're going to breed all over the place.
You don't want to know the number of scientific problems there are with that movie.
Well, yeah, obviously, yeah, it's just a movie, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think anyone's talking about doing Jurassic Park anyway.
Yeah, my best friend, his father-in-law is a biochemist. You know, it's the biggest thing that ticked him off about the movie.
What's that?
And guess what? It's a very minor thing. In the scene where the fat guy is stealing the DNA from the cell, how is he touching those samples which are frozen in liquid nitrogen without protective gloves? Because, you know, he's a biochemist and they keep a lot of their experimental medicines and vaccines and similar stuff like that. And you need a suit to go into those chambers because they're so cold.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, his fingers would have broken off. My thing that's my biggest regret with that movie is if they had portrayed the velociraptors the way they really were, they would have been like 20 times more badass than they were in the movie. But
oh yeah,
it's like, I guess Spielberg thought he had to scale them up. They were normally like between the size of, I think, a turkey and an ostrich. And he had to try to scale them up to be scarier. But man, these things had wings. They could hover while they tear you apart with your talons.
Not to mention, we have fossilized evidence which shows them taking out larger prey because, you know, in the movie, raptors are portrayed as hunting in pairs of two or threes. In real life, they hunted in packs of, of six or ten.
Yep.
Yep. So you wouldn't be fighting one little raptor. You'd be fighting
swarm.
Six of them. You know, that's, yep.
Take a tip from Alfred Hitchcock. Look how he made birds scary. Now imagine velociraptors.
Oh, yeah. You know, birds were scary, you know, not because, you know, the birds kill people. It's because imagine, you know, just like hundreds of thousands of birds coming at you. And I mean, yeah, we've got AA guns, but we can't get them all, you know. And we never figure out why the birds went after humans.
Yeah.
I heard it had something to do with that they ate some poisoned shellfish.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, back to the story.
Yeah. So anyway, you have all these materials that you can put in the 3D printers. The manufacturers, just like with the toner cartridges, only want you to buy the materials from them.
Yep.
And once again, they're making a proceeding in front of the copyright office to do that, even though this has nothing to do with copyright. No one's copyright is being violated if you buy materials from someone else.
Yeah. Technically, this wouldn't even be an argument for copyright. Like, you know, I mean, if you're a good lawyer, I can see you arguing this to the patent office, but copyright? Yeah, isn't that for things like words and computer data and all that?
Yeah, that's for creative content, yeah.
Yeah, it's not for, like, a physical object.
But it has computer software in it, and you can copyright computer software. So,
yeah, just more reasons to hate the copy and patent rights.
It makes no sense to copyright computer software. Computer software is math.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you're copywriting math, people.
Yeah, like, I'm no computer geek, but everyone who knows anything about computers says, yeah, that's all, you know, computer programs are. They're not like this physical entity that exists in an alternate dimension. They're just a bunch of numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of numbers and syllables.
Well, hopefully, since this basically has already been decided before with the 2D laser printers, hopefully this will be a non-starter.
Hopefully.
Bogosity.tv and all of its services are hosted at GoDaddy. I've been very satisfied with GoDaddy's services and their wonderful 24/7 customer support for over 10 years now. So I'm happy to be able to give you this special offer. Just sign up for any new domain, web hosting, email, or other service and get 35% off with the code WOWNOBOGON. That's WOWNOBOGON. Because there's nothing bogus about these savings on quality internet hosting. Just go to GoDaddy.com and use the code WOWNOBOGON. Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Backup sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.bogosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.bogosity.tv and get LastPass now. And now it's time to beam a bunch of tribbles onto the deck of this week's biggest bogon emitter. And this week it goes to ESPN, who is suing Verizon for allowing its customers to have the choice of programming they want.
Oh, man.
Have we not been screaming for this for decades? Let us buy channels a la carte. That's what we want.
Oh, yeah. ESPN, those are the guys that air all the sports things, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Entertainment Sports Programming Network. And they're owned by Disney. And, of course, Disney owns a bunch of other channels as well. And so what they tried to do is say, like, if you want the Disney Channel and all these other channels, you have to include ESPN as well.
Oh, yeah. Because here's the thing. ESPN has been doing this long before the invention. They did the same thing when people were taping their sports events. But it reminds me of a joke on Family Guy. Peter... he has to buy a new VHS player, and his wife's like, what happened to our last one? Then it shows a cutaway gag where Peter's taping the Super Bowl, then a bunch of guys with guns from the FCC show up, and they're like, do you have permission from NBC, ABC, and MSNBC? And Peter's like, just ABC. Okay, do what you have to do, guys. And then they just blow up the VHS player with machine guns. But they did that back in the days. You know, if you taped a Super Bowl champion and then showed it to a friend without permission from ESPN, they could send a person with you with a cease and desist order and like a several $1,000 fine.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's always been crazy. And they're actually going in with Fox and NBC, who is owned by Comcast, who is a competitor to Verizon. Interesting.
Oh, yeah. Follow the money.
Now, what Verizon is doing is not what we want. It's a step in that direction, kind of a little baby step. What they're doing is they have their Fios TV broadband, and they're offering a core lineup of channels, and then they have these $10 add-on packs, and once you get done adding all their usual extra stuff like DVR rental, don't even get me started on that. It's still not that much better than traditional cable.
Oh, yeah.
But they're all throwing a hissy fit over it.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. Every cable or satellite plan I've ever had has ESPN. I do not watch sports. I do not like sports. I hate sports. I do not watch ESPN. And I don't see why I should have to pay for it, quite frankly. So ESPN has filed suit to Verizon, and they haven't actually made the complaint public yet, so we can't get the details. But basically, they're saying that Verizon is in breach of contract and not giving out ESPN as part of their core lineup. They're requesting an immediate injunction and a financial penalty of $500,000. And in a statement, ESPN said, quote, a statement from the network explains that ESPN is at the forefront of embracing innovative ways to deliver high-quality content and value to consumers on multiple platforms, but that must be done in compliance with our agreements. We simply ask that Verizon abide by the terms of our contracts.
Wow. Just wow. Yeah, for once Verizon does something good and ESPN has to come and ruin it.
It's not even good, it's kind of semi-good.
Oh yeah.
It's kind of a little step.
That's not a smart move, ESPN, you know, it's not a smart move on your part.
Well, and they're talking about things like losing ad impressions. How are they losing ad impressions from someone like me who isn't even watching their channel to begin with? But I mean, I guess if there's consumer demand for your product, you don't have to worry about it. If there's not, then I guess you have to go crying to the government to make people purchase your product.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Can't compete on the market? No problem. Bribe the government. We'll fix it all for you.
So all of that makes ESPN this week's biggest bogon emitter. History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's LibertyClassroom.com. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, LibertyClassroom.com teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit LibertyClassroom.com. And now let's power wash this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
And this week, again, it's Senator Dianne Feinstein. And this time she's joined by Senator Susan Collins. And they want the FDA to regulate, get this, soap. Yeah, like soap's a drug, I guess.
Oh, yeah. It's just, they want to regulate everything. First it was organic milk, then it was unpasteurized eggs, and now they want to go after the soap.
Go after soap and shampoo, yeah. This is S.1014, the Personal Care Product Safety Act, introduced in the Senate on 420, and it's beyond ridiculous.
Yeah.
Basically, you have all of these people who just kind of make soap out of their homes, out of their kitchens or whatever. And a lot of them sell it. They sell it to their friends. They sell it to their neighbors. They sell it online.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, these will put them all out of business.
Yeah.
So there was a bunch of product makers called the Handmade Cosmetic Alliance who got together and released a statement which said, quote, "My products comply with FDA labeling requirements, and the ingredients are commonly known, i.e. olive oil, oatmeal, sugar, coconut oil, etc." And just to let you know how this works, anything like that, the FDA considers GRAS, G-R-A-S, generally regarded as safe. And supposedly, as long as you're sticking to those ingredients, you don't have to worry about it. So anyway, continuing the quote, "My best customers are in my community. I cannot afford the user fees proposed in S-1014. Further, my business has no capacity to do the reporting requirements for each product batch, 10 to 50 units, as it could be several hundred FDA filings per month."
Oh, yeah, that is just completely idiotic. And like I said, this isn't the first time the FDA did that. I mean, there was one time where the FDA declared a war on small toy makers because apparently they said, well, we don't know if there's lead in the toys.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole fear of lead.
Because apparently you're guilty until proven innocent.
Oh, yeah.
And that's exactly what she's doing. She's saying it will make the world a safer place for, quote, yeah, everything from shampoo and hair dye to deodorant and lotion. Is this really a problem? Are people like putting lotions on their hands and watching it, you know, melt off like in a horror movie or something?
Yeah. "We can't allow selenium in the shampoo. It might kill those nitrogen-based organisms." That I'm quoting a movie.
I didn't see that one.
Oh, Evolution. It's kind of like Ghostbusters, only instead of battling ghosts, they battle aliens. It's hilarious.
Okay.
Yeah, they kill the aliens using selenium because apparently that's toxic to nitrogen-based life forms.
Ah. Okay. Yeah.
It's really stupid how they come to that conclusion. It's all because, see, here's the thing. Arsenic is poisonous to carbon-based creatures, and he did like this L pattern. Now, if we do the same with nitrogen, we land on selenium. Yeah, I don't think that's how toxics work. Considering the fact that there's many chemicals on the periodic table that are toxic to carbon-based life forms.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So Feinstein said the FDA should use more progressive laws, like in Europe, rather than antiquated U.S. regulations from the 1930s. And isn't this interesting? People make soap the way they've been making it for centuries, and the 1930s regulations are too antiquated. Yet the Telecommunications Act was released in that decade or thereabouts, and apparently that's just fine to take that and apply it to the internet.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Just,
because net neutrality.
I'm so tired of net neutrality. If I see a video saying why we need net neutrality, I won't even watch it because it's just the same bogus over and over again.
Yeah, and she also says, quote, "Consumers deserve to know that the products they use every day are safe. And if you don't have mommy government to do it for you, you won't know that because government is omnipotent and they're the only ones who can determine that."
Yeah, and it's like people are saying, well, you don't want the consumers to know. I thought you want transparency. Well, yeah, but here's the thing, and I know this from firsthand with me having obsessive compulsive disorder. Sometimes it honestly is best for the consumer if the material is harmless. They don't know what's in there because the fact is, you know, like they're afraid of chemicals and all that. Almost any chemical can sound scary if you use the proper words with it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the hydrogen monoxide. There's also this other chemical that one person made a joke about, which is just says, "Ever heard of sodium chloride?" It's like, no. Oh, it's made out of two extremely toxic substances. One is a poisonous metal that explodes when it comes into contact in water, and the other one is a deadly gas that was used by the Germans in both world wars. Well, did you know that people are putting this two chemical composition in your food and all that? It's like, oh my, what is it? Salt. Yep.
I've done that before.
Really?
With a psychoactive drug called methylxanthine. And I go on about how it has the same effect on your brain as cocaine and heroin, and 10 grams is enough to be fatal and go through all that. You know what I'm talking about?
Caffeine.
Caffeine is it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Almost all chemicals are toxic in some dose or another. It's the dose that counts, you know?
Absolutely.
So even if there is a toxic substance in the soap, usually, and I've heard this, that some chemicals in soaps are toxic, but they put so little in it, like only 1% of it is in there, that it's not going to bother you.
Well, and it's like, this is a toxic chemical when you inject it directly into a rat, not when you rub it on your skin or whatever.
Oh, yeah, because these tend to be the same people who think that a poison is the same thing as venom.
Yeah.
Yeah, here's something interesting. Did you know you can drink snake venom and it won't hurt you?
Yeah, because it has to go directly into the bloodstream.
Yep, so as long as it doesn't enter in any cuts, so as long as you don't have any internal cuts, you're in the clear.
Yeah. So Feinstein says that this is going to be a streamlined national system of oversight, and she promises it won't cost the taxpayer a dime. Where have we heard that before?
Oh, yeah. It's similar to what Obama said when he introduced, you know, the healthcare plan. He's like, if you like your healthcare, you can keep it. And then he started going after people that didn't have the right insurance plan.
Like me.
Oh, really? They actually went after
you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
I had an insurance plan that covered me and my kids. It wasn't a Cadillac plan or anything. It didn't pay every time we blew our nose, but it paid for like a couple of well visits a year. And it had, I forget what deductible it was, a few thousand. And it was like a couple hundred a month. Now, the cheapest I can get on the exchange just for me is twice that.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
With a higher deductible.
And it's funny, so many progressives like to use people like you saying why we need a universal healthcare system, yet you're the one who's getting hurt by it, so
that's how it always works.
Oh, yeah.
They say we need to do this to help the poor, and then the poor get ground under the gears.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's just the problem, you know? I mean, if it was a poor person, you know, preaching this, I mean, I guess I could see an honest debate with them, but when a rich person is saying this, I'm going to say you have no clue what you're talking about, because you can afford, you know, to pay that extra cost. You know, the average Joe can't.
But she did say it will be funded by industry user fees. So who's going to pay for it?
The big cosmopolitan companies.
Nope. The customers.
Oh.
That's what they have to do. You raise costs, you have to raise the price.
Oh, I thought you meant that the cosmopolitan companies were going to, you know, decide what's a regular or whatnot, because the government's been known to do that, you know.
Oh, yeah, and they might do it here, too.
Yeah, they say, we want to regulate, you know, a certain, you know, industry, so they contact all these big companies and say, well, what do you think should be regulated? And what do the companies do? They implement laws that keep out their competitors.
Every regulation increases the cost of doing business, and here she just comes right out and says that.
Oh, yeah.
So these big companies, these big brand corporations, these big multinationals, they'll be able to absorb the increased fees and handle the paperwork a lot better than the small fry who's just working out of his kitchen or wherever.
Oh, yeah, you know, people said, yeah, we're going to charge those greedy companies an extra $10,000. That way they won't exploit us. These are companies that are making billions of dollars a year. $10,000 is like nothing to them. That's like them giving a penny away.
Yeah, so here are some of the companies that support the bill. You have Johnson & Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Procter & Gamble.
Oh, Pete, Procter & Gamble. No, my mom shops there a lot.
Yeah. Revlon.
Never heard of them.
They do makeup, I think, mostly.
Oh. Mm.
Makeup and, like, the tools for, like, doing fingernails and manicures and stuff like that.
So I guess my mom's probably used their products at some point.
I've used their products. I got Revlon fingernail clippers right here on the desk in front of me.
Oh.
Yeah. Estee Lauder. That really, really big name. Unilever. And they do Dove, St. Ives, Noxema, Pond's, Vaseline, and Degree.
Oh, man, like the company that makes Vaseline is doing that? Oh, come on.
Yep.
Now you're making me hate Vaseline. I'm dependent on that product.
And L'Oreal is another one.
Yeah.
So all of these love it, but when it comes to the Handmade Cosmetic Alliance, quote, the HCA had several meetings over many months with the sponsor of S-1014 and presented information to support small business exemptions similar to those of the 2011 Food Modernization Safety Act. Sadly, a decision was made to use prescription drugs and medical device standards for small handmade cosmetic businesses. So the same thing when they make Ritalin or Vicodin or something like that, or, you know, when they're making a defibrillator, all of that applies to soap.
Wow. And the thing is, the regulations we have for pills and all that are pretty tough, too, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I always laugh at those pill commercials because they always say, this pill, you know, will will cure your heart pain or whatnot. And then the guy goes, side effects may include this, that, and this.
They have to do that because they have to avoid the lawyers. Yeah.
My friend's father-in-law says, 90% of those side effects are never going to occur. And if they do, they're going to be very, very minor. The only reason they put that is because if the pill is taken by someone who has a bad reaction, you're open for a lawsuit.
Oh, yeah. The FDA regulates all that.
Yep. And now you're going to take that same logic to soap. So now every time I'm going to take a shower and I open up a new bar of soap, it's going to say, warning, if you use this product too much, it'll do this and that to you. That's going to be a lot of fun.
So they go on, quote, "This does not make sense. My products are soaps, lotions, and scrubs made largely with food-grade ingredients found in any grocery store." It doesn't make any sense. They're right.
Yeah.
It makes no sense at all.
I wouldn't be surprised if the FDA starts saying, then that means we got to go to the food now. We got to start putting all these large warning labels on the food.
Yeah, they're already starting doing that.
Oh, yeah, I can't tell you how many products I have, like I remember seeing a can of Jell-O that said, warning, it may have came in contact with allergens.
Yeah, or may have been made in the same factory where someone sneezed who was just in another factory with peanuts or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, they're heaping all of these requirements onto food, and these requirements, make drugs really, really expensive. What's it going to do with these soaps and everything?
It's like people like to say, our healthcare is expensive because of profit. The real reason is because we want to imitate what the Europeans are doing, which is regulate the market in.
Well, even if the exemptions for small businesses do get in there, I'm a small businessman, but I'm against exemptions for small businesses because I think that if small businesses should be allowed to do something, the big businesses should be allowed to do it too.
That's actually why I hate the anti-Walmart movement because, there's plenty of towns, that don't get Walmart because the local community gets together and they form this little mini corporatist-like state and they say, well, no, we don't want any outsiders in,
Yeah, so it's in committee, so maybe it'll get, amended to solve all those problems. It may not even go anywhere. We don't know.
Hopefully it'll die in committee.
Yeah, but either way, it's that transparent corporatism that once again makes Dianne Feinstein, along with Susan Collins, this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
Well, that wraps up this contract arrived for you from a Mr. Elzebub edition of the Bogosity Podcast. As always, you can come to forum.bogosity.tv to read the show notes and join the discussion. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website or at patreon.bogosity.tv, and feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. You can even stick it in an audio file if you want. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Chris Hangartner for joining me.
Glad to be here too, Shane.
Until next time, here's a quote from Ralph Nader. "The Democratic and Republican parties are two apparently distinct political entities feeding at the same corporate trough." The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Imported License.
Bogosity.
Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.
Oh, Ralph Nader. He was once a nice guy. Now he's crazy.
Well, he was always a bit crazy, but he also had a lot of good points to make.
Oh, yeah. Just because we disagree with the person doesn't mean the quote's bad.
Right.
As much as I hate Noam Chomsky, he has some good quotes. Oh, crap. For some reason, my recorder's reflecting.
What's it doing?
It's repeating my other message.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because you're doing it on a different track is what it is.
Oh.
See if you can mute that track.
Okay.
There should be a mute button there. I forget where it is on Audacity.
Just having tech problems today. I've heard that happens, though, sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. It's just I said we're having tech problems, and my other track said, yep. That's good coincidence. Yeah, come on. You know what? I'm just going to ignore the track. I'll do my best.
Okay.
It's just going to cause more problems.
All right. What else can we say about this? I've kind of gotten distracted.
Yeah.
I lost my righteous indignation here.
Yeah. Is this the first time something like this has happened on a podcast?
When we get the tech problems, it can kind of take the wind out of us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the UN just seems to mess things up more than fix things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, one of the reasons why this thing happened in the first place was because the radicals were in power and they were saying all these angry things. And some people were saying, I think the UN needs to do something about this guy. And they say, nope, we got to support both sides. And the problem was that both the Tutsis and the Hutus had radical parties in power. And you know what happens? You know, there were no moderates. So
that's how it works. The Tutsis and the Hutus, that's another big Indian, little Indian type thing. You know what the difference is? It's the width of your nose.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of
and
that.
And I forget which way it goes, but if you have a wide nose, you're one. If you have a narrow nose, you're the other, and that means you get to kill each other.
Yeah, from what I can gather, one of my friends who studies African culture said that's what they used to do back when Rwanda was a Belgian colony. The Belgian colonial leaders would go around villages and they would measure like the noses, the heights and the width of the head. And if you were a Tutsi, because they liked the Tutsis, they said, okay, you get special powers. Whereas the Hutus were oppressed.
And then, you know, if you have war and then the Hutus take over, and then it's the Hutus who are the good people and the Tutsis who need to be oppressed.
Oh, yeah.
Big Indians and little Indians. That's all it is.
Oh, yeah. Same thing. Not to mention, if the U.S. got involved in Rwanda, it most definitely would have turned into Somalia. Because remember, the United States is not very popular in Central Africa. They see us as the warmongers, which we kind of are.
Yeah, okay, I wonder why.
Yeah, if anything, if the U.S. were to, in theory, deploy troops on the ground in Rwanda, it wouldn't end the genocide. What it probably would have done was sparked a bigger civil war that probably would have drawn in more African nations and led to an even bigger mess. Just like what they said about Iraq, you know, I mean, we can't be certain. We have to go in there just in case, and look what that led to. It's hard to believe I almost at one point wanted to be a cop. Well, one of the reasons I stopped them was because I couldn't handle the program that they were going to have. But another reason was because later I read all, you know, these news stories of what the police are doing, and I'm like, wow, I honestly have no idea why I wanted to be a part of this. Because here's the thing, even if I did become a cop and I honestly wanted to be a good cop, I've heard from some people who used to be cops said they tried to be honest, good cops, but there's this pressure system that if I'm a police officer does something bad, you got to stick up for the department. You can't,
yep,
can't say
the,
well,
thin blue line.
Yep. Yep. If one of your guys, you know, beats a little kid to death, you know, you have to defend your fellow officer. You can't say, oh yeah, he was totally wrong. He should be punished. You can't say that.
Yeah.
Not to mention there was one police officer who caught the, I think it was one of the Alabama police departments, give ticket quotas, even though that's strictly against Alabama law.
They don't care. They're above the law.
Oh, yeah. All they care about is their arrest rate and their budgets.
And then they wonder why there are riots.
Yep.
Not saying it's justified, just saying it's inevitable.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And going back, like, to the whole BP thing, I actually learned this. You know, people like to use BP as an example why corporations, you know, need, you know, a watcher. But here's the thing. The reason why BP, you know, got away with polluting the Gulf of Mexico without too much consequences was because both the United States and British government said, don't worry, BP, we'll handle any damage that occurs from your oil rigs.
Yeah, and they capped their liability, and I forget what it was, so they were never going to be liable for the full thing. And the regulators inspected it and signed off on it, so they can even get clearance on that. Just going to court, we're like, well, look, the regulators, what more can we do? The regulators signed off on it, even though they were probably bribed, but there you go.
Or they had very low standards, because governments are very notorious for, like, they use really, really outdated equipment, and a professional expert says, I think you need to upgrade or do something because this isn't very good, and they say, Oh, who cares? We've been doing this for 20 years and it's never failed us. That's one of the reasons why our federal aviation is so long, because while many aviation companies in other parts of the world are using computers and other software to help them, you know, manage flights, many airlines in America, you know, because they're regulated by the government, still use the old classic pen and paper.
Oh, yeah.
That's the reason why many flights get delayed, because, you know, there's a plane wanting to land and all that, and they're saying, look, we're ready to land, and there's a guy scrambling all these papers saying, okay, just a second, let me find your number.
That's assuming the overworked guy is even awake.
Oh, yeah.
We've covered that before, too.
Oh, really? Some of those government employees fell asleep on the job?
Oh, there was one who even got the cushions and made them into a little bed. It's back in the archive somewhere. I might have to pull it up. I don't know if you'll find it.
That kind of reminds me of this one news story I saw where, you know how when there's an emergency, your program gets interrupted and they make that loud beeping sound?
Yeah.
There was actually an incident where there was, I don't know if it was a hurricane warning or a child abduction, but it was live, and someone reportedly heard pop music in the background, and one of the workers said, oh yeah, well, we were listening to Lady Gaga while we were airing this warning.
Yeah. And they had the wrong audio going through, yeah.
Yeah, that just shows how little they care.
These are the people who protect us.
Oh, yeah, people. Yeah, for anyone who's a statist listening to this podcast, although we don't get much, unfortunately, but if you're a statist, these are the people you want in charge, so just saying.
Yeah, they like their echo chambers, so they're probably not going to come here.
I liked those Japanese car companies back when they were legitimate, honest businesses. Now, sadly, they suffered from GM disease, where now they think that the only way they compete in the American market is to file lawsuits, although I can't blame them, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably right. That's the sad part.
I've actually heard some companies have flat out said that. They said they don't want to lobby, they don't want to introduce these harsh programs, but the problem is that there's too many, you know, those big corporations, you know, lobbying for these, that they have no choice but to lobby for special protection.
Well, go do a search for Microsoft and the name Orrin Hatch. He was a senator back in the 90s, and Microsoft was staying out of the whole political thing. We're not going to do any lobbying. We're not going to do anything like that. We're going to run our business and leave everyone else the hell alone. And Orrin Hatch basically led this thing about, you know, we've got to show them they can't get away with that. And they started harassing them with all these potential antitrust actions and everything. And so Microsoft grudgingly started giving lobbying money, and now they're one of the biggest tech lobbyists.
I don't know if it's true or not, so don't quote me on this one, but I've actually heard that's one of the reasons why the government went after Rockefeller back in the day. It wasn't because Rockefeller was a monopolist, it's because he wasn't a sellout. He wasn't giving a portion of his profits to the government like many oil companies were doing, and they were like, hey, Rockefeller, pay us money. Because apparently the government made a claim that says, well, we own the land the oil was located on. And Rockefeller said, no, I purchased it from you. And they said, well, fine, if you're not going to give us money, we're going to pass an antitrust law and destroy your company.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the thing. Standard Oil was mostly about refinery.
Yeah.
Not actually getting the crude. They bought their crude oil and then refined it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's another thing that gets forget about. You know, all those people who says capitalism destroys the environment. Did you know that Rockefeller played a role in destroying the whale industry?
Oh, absolutely, because his kerosene was much cheaper than whale oil.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it still continued in other parts of Europe, but the United States market was pretty high. And when it went down, you know, fewer whales got killed because there was fewer people that needed them to kill whales for the oil. So, I mean, now we actually have a lot of whales that are actually plentiful. I remember hearing somewhere that some whales that used to be on the verge of extinction are now actually, you know, recovering now. And they're actually becoming very common.
Oh, yeah. That's how you end whaling. Make it unprofitable.
Oh, yeah.